top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 445 for the Really Awful Movies podcast. Stage Fright, terrific double entendre title, and directed by perhaps the most and least recognizable person in the pantheon of horror. Well, let me explain. Michele Soavi is probably best known for being the half-face, the kind of quasi-Phantom of the Opera, Phantom of the Paradise type character who bestows upon two unwitting university students passes to a horror film in the 1985 quasi-Lamberto Bava classic Demons. But he is quite an accomplished director in his own right, having studied at the feet of Lucio Fulci and Dario Argento, two of the three main dudes in the legends of the Italian horror space, and of course is responsible for Della Morte dell'Amore. But I am very glad I did check in with Stage Fright, because I've visited it, although not in its entirety, several times in the past few years, but figured it was weird enough and crazy enough and gaudy enough and spectacular enough and just completely silly enough to warrant a broader discussion here. I mean, this is just super fun, and it has everything I love about wild Italian horror genre films. It's just so tonally strange and very, very odd and ceaselessly entertaining in a way that few films are. It reminded me in some respects of Plankton, that 90s horror film that it just, you know, super fun, super wild, super crazy visuals, really almost jarringly incoherent, weird, tonally off scenes that can be off-putting if you're not really in the mood for it, but it looks like the work of a madman. And it has some principles involved too that I quite like, and we'll get into that. Now, Stage Fright falls into the broader category of what I like to call theatrical horror. And you could throw in the likes of a popcorn, perhaps an opera. Of course, as I alluded to, Dario Argento and his Suspiria, Phantom of the Paradise as well. Something that involves some sort of visual spectacle. You could throw in New Year's Evil as well with this big band performance. Or something like a Paganini horror. There's countless examples of horror films that really tap the arts. And in this one, it's actually theater kids that are involved. So in much the way that, as I discussed in the 90s horror popcorn, where you have all these kids with similar sensibilities coming together to produce what they hope is something engaging and something rewarding. And you know, this one, I mean, you got a theater director complete with the cliche of the theater director, which would be the ascot. And of course, he's very temperamental, and he's guiding this group of players through these elaborate dance numbers that you see at the beginning. And this whole setup and this whole play is built around the idea of a mass murderer dressed up in an owl costume, like almost a Minerva, very kind of freaky and spooky outfit, and one of his principal victims. So I guess it's a stage show with elements of jazz and modern dance. But it has this element of the dark and the foreboding and the surreal, which is quite neat. And what's also quite neat too is various members of the troupe go missing and are murdered, and all signs point to a murderer who is being confined at the local mental institution, which of course is just glorious as well. You gotta love that. And you also gotta love how this dance troupe interfaces with said mental institution despite having no reason to do so. So one of the members of the team, one of the dancers, twists her ankle and ends up going to this mental hospital. I guess they really are in the middle of nowhere, and this is the closest medical facility around, and she actually gets treated by a psychiatrist who it seems is rather enamored with her physicality, and much in the same way as the Barbie Benton examination in Hospital Massacre. But he seems to be involving more than just her ankle in the examination. He's rubbing his hands up and down her thigh. It's just one of the weird scenes where she has this interface with a mental hospital, which makes not a lick of sense. And then, a la one of the Halloween sequels, of course, the killer breaks free from the confines of the mental hospital. And that's not the only reference to Halloween there is in this film. But it's just kind of funny how the guy is Irving Wallace, and he's supposedly murdered at least a dozen co-eds, if I'm not mistaken, in this region. And he's been kept not exactly under lock and key by any means, but he's just been tied to his bed with like one restraint, and he breaks free and of course wreaks havoc on everyone involved in the immediate vicinity. And it's just so ridiculous, so crazy, as is actually quite a neat performance by a very effete John Morgan, aka Giovanni Lombardo Radice, I think it was Swan Company or some early Shakespearean company. So he's got some like theatrical stage bona fides, and yet he's starred, and again, he passed away last spring, but he starred in 3 cannibal movies despite having this pedigree of being a proper stage actor, something which he fought and struggled to come to terms with and seemed to be quite embittered by when he would go to different horror cons all over the world, because obviously he's best known for these, you know, trio of cannibal movies, Cannibal Apocalypse with John Saxon, Cannibal Ferox, of course, and Cannibal Love, but House on the Edge of the Park, just all these sort of gory, disgusting Italian exploitation films, and yet he fancied himself a higher brow actor, and for all we know, he probably was, because I'm not familiar with his non-horror work, but I guess he kind of followed where the money went, and fine, fair play to him. And he plays one of the dancers in very effect, and at one point he sings, "There's no business like show business," almost like an Ethel Merman type character, and it's very funny and quite endearing in a way. And he's had some really quite iconic roles in horror films, and it's really neat. This one as well, he's great. I can't remember his character's name, but again, one of the dancers. He has a lot of scenes that are quite neat. And soon enough, again, this Irving Wallace is on the loose. And what's funny about his this madman escaping is that they actually incorporate that aspect of things into the play, because this Minerva is an unnamed antagonist, but yet the director of this production gives him a name and says, "Hey, that's Irving Wallace." And he says, strangely enough, that this is the kind of thing that will actually put bums in seats, which is mind-boggling, because if anything, people would think it's incredibly exploitative to have a killer on the loose, and you've incorporated that into one of your productions as a selling point. It's very, very tacky and very unbelievable. It almost works as a quasi version of Mel Brooks' The Producers. It's something that's like guaranteed to tank the production, really, because who would want that? It's in such poor taste. But what Stage Fright has going for it is some wonderful kills, including an amazing pickaxe to the head of one of the dancers. And it takes a turn in that the killer, it's typically in horror, and particularly in 80s slashers, there's no acknowledgement of the upping of the body count until, say, the end, where you have the police coming upon a scene, like, I forget, one of the Friday the 13th sequels, I think it was 3 or 4, where you have this team of detectives investigating and going, "Oh, I can't believe what I've seen here." This is unbelievable. You could throw more recently the film X into that one, where you have these police sort of covering their mouths and going, oh my God, what's happening? But in Stage Fright, the first victim is actually precipitates and spurs a broader police investigation because she's found right there. I mean, it's right outside the theater where they're doing their practices and doing their... getting ready for the their debut. But I guess this performance and this production is happening in about, I think, a week and a half or something like that. So, and they seem, at least by all accounts, it could just be the prima donna director, but it seems like they're a little bit off the mark and they have a long ways to go before they really hone in on the and get their sea legs and really get the performance nailed. Another thing I really liked about this is, this is going to be a shorter podcast today because I'm kind of busy this week, but I really like genre player George Eastman, the kind of towering horror principal, frequently, as befits his, I think, 6'9 or 6'10 height, would be a frequently cast antagonist, as he is here, as he portrays the killer when he's masked. So the killer actually in an amazing display of irony, as befits a production that turns out to be about an escaped serial killer. He dons said mask, the owl mask, and begins to murder the principals of the show, and members of the troupe begin falling off one by one. You're going to need a lot of understudies for this particular production, I gotta say. But he was great in a film I recently watched called Absurd, but he's in other films as well, if I'm not mistaken, Anthropophagus, however you pronounce it, but lots of these things. And it's super cool to see such a campy, delightful, I mean, over-the-top slasher with lots of stylistic asides and references to what I guess you could call Soavi's mentors, which would be Argento and Fulci. So you have these kinds of little vignettes where there's a lot of focus on, let's say, the rain. So there's this absurd amount of just deluge and downpour that's casting a pall over the proceedings, but adding a lot of really wonderful atmosphere. And after the first kill, there's mud running aplenty and gushing, and the rainfall becomes a character unto itself incorporated here. And it's super fun. It's super evocative. This is all around just a fun, silly movie. You gotta love it. You gotta love the rehearsals are fun too. The opening dance sequence is really great as well. And I just had so much fun with this too. There's a syringe to the eyeball, a little bit like, what is it, Dead and Buried, that has that kind of kill, although not nearly as evocative and not nearly something that, say, Fulci would have brought to the screen in The Beyond or, Demonia or one of the iconic eye kills that Maestro Fulci did. But this one has something going for it. It's got a certain cheesy appeal. It's gotten a certain over-the-top sensibility that can only happen with theater kids and the theater. And I think if that kind of sensibility really resonates with you, and I think if you're a fan of something like Phantom of the Paradise, which is albeit a much more somber and serious type of film, but I think if you're into the theatrical and into that kind of vein, and it's something that is seldom tapped in horror, as it tends to lean on more the musicality side of things, or let's say film productions, film within a film, like a Truffaut-esque type thing. I'm not aware of too many horrors that play upon the idea of the stage, and all the world's a stage, and indeed we are merely players. And I'm going to play to a little bit of a shorter podcast this time around because I've got a bunch to do, but I wanted to touch base and just keep up my diligent, dutiful uploading on a Friday. We'll come to you with a fuller, more fulsome version of a podcast. So a quick one today, and we'll talk to you soon, and take care.